Hello, I'm Theo, one of the normal poorly informed team, and I'm going to be hosting and presenting this episode. This is the first of our new poorly informed series, poorly informed, slightly more informed. So on top of our regular once a week series, which we know many of you enjoy, we're also going to occasionally put separate side side episodes out. This one, for instance, is on Brexit. I'll be talking about Brexit and everything that's happened since that referendum in 2016. Maybe we'll do them on essays we've written. Maybe we'll do them on other big things in the news. Whatever we want to, really. It'll often be shorter, a bit more relevant, a bit easier to listen to than our normal stuff. But once again, welcome to Poorly Informed, Slightly More Informed. And this week, Theo does Brexit. So, it's in the news. We don't often cover stuff in the news, but we thought this was such a big deal. One of us had to talk about it, and guess who drew the short straw? So, I'm going to be bringing you up to speed on Brexit. Hopefully, this will act as a simple guide, as a way for you to understand what is going on, because there's a lot of it, and it's all messy and horrible and I don't know, it's not particularly fun, but it is worth knowing about. So let's go through the background. I'll spend a couple of minutes exploring the background, because I believe that that's as important as knowing what's happening today. And then we will work through what has happened since the 23rd of June 2016. So, the European Union, often called the EU, was formed in the 1950s under a different name. Then in the 1970s, Britain thought, that sounds like fun, how about we join? We were in the European Union for a few years, and then we held a referendum to check whether people still wanted us to stay in. The referendum said by a two-thirds vote, yes, we would like to stay a part of the European Union. So we did, and we have been part of that institution since 1973. The EU is a sort of funny organisation. It's basically an economic grouping of countries designed to bring together countries to make it easier to trade and to move and to work in other countries by lowering costs and making it easier to make trade agreements. It also sponsors science, more and more military stuff. You have university exchange programs. It regulates aviation and fuel and electricity and all the rest of it. Lots of our environmental laws are from the EU, actually. So it's a sort of economic and cultural organisation designed to bring Europe together to stop another war. The headquarters is in Brussels, which is why often Eurosceptics, so people who don't like the EU, will accuse Brussels of doing this or that. And the most powerful countries in it are France and Germany, which is why often you'll also hear those Eurosceptics talk about Germany. But we were quite happily in the EU. For whatever reason, people who didn't like the EU tended to be in the Conservative Party and tended to be more right wing. That is, they have a big focus on free markets. The government doesn't do a huge amount or get involved, which makes sense. They don't like the EU because it's telling us what to do, telling us how to govern our country, they believe. And over time, this right wing slowly developed to really, really dislike the EU, effectively hate it. But they were only a fringe group until the 2010s. When they were given a boost, a sort of unifying force in the form of an energised UKIP party. UKIP standing for UK Independence Party. That is, they want independence from the European Union. Two things really drove their rise. The first was that a lot of people were upset and disillusioned with the main two parties. They felt that Labour and the Conservatives hadn't protected them from the financial crash in 2008 and felt that David Cameron's austerity was hurting them very badly, especially the poorest and the marginalised in society. So they decided to back UKIP as a way of protesting against Westminster, which is where our parliament is, and the European Union in general. The second thing was the migrant crisis, when chaos in the Middle East and in North Africa drove hundreds of thousands of immigrants to flee across the Mediterranean and land in Europe. Now, the EU was blamed for this because the EU is a single market, which is, once you're in the European Union, you can move anywhere and go anywhere without having to use passports, without having to use documentation or have special regulations. You can drive across the border from Germany to France, and then France to Italy, and then Italy into Hungary. No, that's not, you can't go from Italy to Hungary, don't do that. But you see the point. So a lot of these immigrants would land illegally, and would maybe be able to get into Italy without being noticed. And once they're in, they can move around the continent and go where they will. A lot of people were scared by this and felt threatened by this. And so people attacked the EU for allowing it to happen. And again, this gave strength to UKIP and also lots of other parties in Europe, which also didn't like the EU. So you have these two things, a migrant crisis and not liking the political establishment, come together to create a fairly strong anti-European Union force, which causes a lot of trouble for then Prime Minister David Cameron, who, to try and shut up many of his own party, the Conservatives, says, we'll have an EU referendum, Remain will probably win, and then we can get on with life, and you guys will be embarrassed and humiliated into shutting up for a long time. So, we're now in 2016. Quite a rubbish campaign David Cameron ran to stay in the European Union, and the result is 51.9% to leave the EU and to stay in the European Union, 48.1%. So a 4% majority for Remain. David Cameron, embarrassed, has to resign, and Theresa May becomes Prime Minister. And that's where the Brexit story really gets going. Theresa May becomes Prime Minister by September 2016. She assembles her cabinet and starts planning for what is the biggest political change in the UK and in much of Europe since World War II. Britain is a power in the EU. It is one of two military powers, along with France, the second biggest economy. It has a lot of cultural influence. Think of how many singers and writers and artists who are British. So us leaving the EU is a fairly big deal, both for them and for us. And of course, we've been part of the European Union for 35 years, so we are now, many of their laws are our laws. Many things we do are along European Union guidelines. Many of the trade deals we have are through the European Union. It's like living with a family for 20 years, or being part of a family for 20 years, and suddenly you decide, no, I don't care, I want to leave. You have no money, and you have no way of living for yourself, and you've got to work out how to leave the house. That's a rubbish analogy, but I think you get what I mean. So, Theresa May has to come up with a plan for how to leave the EU, because there are different ways to leave the EU. The EU is a big organisation. It's not just 28 countries in one group, everyone follows the same rules. There's lots of different footnotes and asterisks and all these different subsections. Different countries have different rules. There are side organisations and partner organisations. Some countries are in a separate but similar European Economic Community. It's a bit crazy. It's like, if you can picture the scene, one of those play fun houses that you go to when you're little, with tunnels and bridges and foam pits and ball pits. It's this big sprawling organisation. And what's really quite sharp about that analogy is there are lots of different ways in as well. But there's also lots of different ways out. You can come out through a tunnel or through a slide, and that represents the many different ways you can leave the EU. The EU, as I mentioned before, is a single market, which means when you're in the European Union, if you're in the European Union, you can move around without any documents or passport checks or any restrictions whatsoever. Unless you're in the UK, when you have to present your passport to border control when you leave the country. So, the question is, do we still want to be a part of this single market, like Norway, Liechtenstein, Iceland are, but without having to be a proper part of the EU? Do we want to be a part of a customs union? So we have a lot of the economic benefits, and we can trade our goods very cheaply with them, like Turkey. So those two options are soft Brexits. Do we want to leave the European Union completely and be a separate state and then negotiate a free trade agreement with them after we leave, or have a separate deal with them, rather? That would be a hard Brexit. Or we could have a no-deal Brexit, which is where we don't make any plans or preparations and just sort of leave and see what happens. If that sounds stupid, that's because it is. So you've got different Brexits. Theresa May has to decide which one to go for, and she looks like she's going to go for a hard Brexit. But before she really decides anything, before she has a negotiating position, before the details are cleared out, she declares Article 50. The infamous Article 50. Article 50 is the bit of European Union law that says a country can leave once it declares Article 50. So, once you declared it, you now have a 2-year time period in which you must agree a withdrawal agreement. So, what is our relationship with the EU going to look like after we leave? So, you must agree a withdrawal agreement within that time. Alternatively, you can extend Article 50 or cancel Article 50. If she declares Article 50 before really knowing what sort of withdrawal agreement she wants, what type of Brexit she wants. Again, if that sounds stupid, that's because it is. So, I've mentioned another thing there, the withdrawal agreement. The withdrawal agreement is basically the term for the deal that Theresa May tries to go for. So when you think withdrawal agreement, think Theresa May's version of Brexit. So you have this withdrawal agreement. Throughout 2017, you have lots of negotiations, most of which don't go anywhere. People are like, okay, well, we better hurry it up in 2018. In 2018, they take about 11 months. In fact, going back to 2017, then there's a general election. Theresa May, when taking over from David Cameron, had a majority in Parliament. She could pass whatever law she wanted, as long as not too many Conservatives rebelled. Theresa May called a general election, thinking that she would wipe out the rather useless Jeremy Corbyn, leader of the opposition Labour Party, and that she would have loads more seats and she would be much safer. She didn't. She lost seats and was unable to form a clear majority in Parliament. So she had to go into a supply and confidence coalition deal with a Northern Ireland party called the DUP. That is important. So she's been humiliated. She's now having to go into a coalition with the tiny Northern Ireland party. And now she's still not any closer to getting a good deal. So 2018 rolls on, and it becomes clear that she wants a hard deal, Brexit, a hard Brexit. But that is going to be a problem. Do you remember the DUP? So they are in favour of Northern Ireland being close to the UK. In fact, basically this a part of the UK, like the Midlands or Devon. But if Northern Ireland is going to be a part of the United Kingdom, and the United Kingdom goes for a hard deal, which means we can't trade freely with other EU countries, that means that the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, an EU country, will be shut off and closed with border restrictions and customs checks. That would be bad. When you think Northern Ireland, think crap. Because the entire foundation of peace in Northern Ireland, following the Troubles in the 1980s, is built upon the fact that people can move freely from Northern Ireland to the Republic of Ireland. There are no costs, there's no tariffs, there's no charges. People can come and go as they like. There's a hard border down there that compromises the entire peace. There could be violence, there could be trouble, and there would be bloodshed. And Theresa May wouldn't have to pay so much attention to Northern Ireland. She could instead create a separate little trade agreement for it, except for the DUP, who want Northern Ireland to be treated as an integral part of the UK. So instead of having Northern Ireland in its own little halfway house to preserve the peace there, it has to be as though the rest of the UK, it has to be treated the same as the rest of the UK, all because her government's existence relies on a tiny Northern Ireland party. If that sounds stupid, that's because it is. So this is the type of deal she went for, the Chequers Agreement, some call it, or the Withdrawal Agreement, which is a deal where, if agreed by Parliament and the EU, we have a 2-year period starting from this March where we can agree a trade deal with the EU, where we will be sort of part of the European Union, but without having a say in their laws and their rules. Once that 2-year period is ended, we leave the EU, hopefully with a really wonderful trade agreement that means everyone is happy. In case that doesn't happen, Theresa May put into place a backstop. Now, the backstop is the UK would sort of still be in a single market, so that there is still free trade, and Northern Ireland would be even closer to the single market. So it would be like in a friendship group, you have that, you've got a close friendship group and you've got that friend that you'll sometimes hang out with that's fairly cool. That's Northern Ireland. That would be Northern Ireland. Not a main part of the group, but he's sort of there and he's sort of chill. But then Northern Ireland has another friend, the United Kingdom, who no one really likes. He just sort of is there. It would be a bit like that. Northern Ireland would be a bit closer to the EU and the UK would be right on the fringes, sort of there without anyone liking it being there. And this is what the problem is. Many of the Conservatives want, many of the Conservative Brexiters or Eurosceptics want a deal where Britain leaves the EU, a hard Brexit. Many of the Conservatives who want to remain or in Labour who want to remain want a soft Brexit. Theresa May's deal doesn't really satisfy either of them because they wouldn't be really in the EU, but they wouldn't be really out of the EU. The Brexiters think that Theresa May's backstop could go on forever and that she's tricking them into trying to keep the UK in the EU forever. This is complicated. I'm going to leave a little pause now so that you can stop the episode if you need to and try and catch up and re-summarise that in your head. Okay, so you've got this agreement that no one likes. Now, Theresa May in 2017 was bound by the High Court, the Supreme Court, that she has to go to Parliament over Brexit. She can't just do it all herself. So she takes the withdrawal agreement to Parliament and she says, hey, I've got this thing, would you approve it for me please? And it looks like they're going to say no. So she says, well, tell you what, we'll move it back a few weeks. So it's going to happen before Christmas, but now it's going to happen in January. January 2019, by the way, basically 12 weeks before we had to leave the European Union, because that's when Article 50 runs out. And everyone's a bit like, hmm. And it happens. It happens 2 weeks ago, the vote. And Theresa May's withdrawal agreement pleases so few people that the government suffers the worst government defeat in the history of the UK Parliament. It is a wipeout. She loses by 200 votes. Most of her party, well, a third of her party, votes against her. It is nuts. That withdrawal agreement is now dead in the water. It has ceased to be. So we have no agreement. We have very little time to make a new agreement. Theresa May says she doesn't want to extend Article 50, which means we have 10 weeks, which means it looks like we could be going for a no-deal Brexit, which would be bad. And very quickly, let me describe why. A no-deal Brexit would be bad because, as I said, we would be leaving the European Union, which for years has made our laws and which has helped us regulate our country. That means we would have no... Leaving the European Union would mean we could not take those laws with us. We would not have rules around aviation and air travel. We would not be able to buy on the international fuel markets. We would not have rules around radioactive materials. We would not be able to import goods cheaply from the EU, which includes food. Most big countries in the world have agreements with the EU. So being in the EU means we can import goods cheaply from those countries. Being out of the EU means we can't. It means that we can't buy products quickly. It means that the country would not be able to purchase oil. In fact, anything. For a small comparison, in 2000, when lorry drivers blocked oil refineries to stop oil being distributed around the UK, supermarkets had to ration milk and bread, and army ambulances had to be pressed into active service because we couldn't rely on NHS ones. And that was 1 week of not having oil. A no-deal Brexit would mean we were shut off from the outside world and completely alone. When you hear no deal, you think absolute dog's bollocks. Got that? Okay. So, what happens now? Well, you sent in some questions about Brexit, and this is a good place to start. What alternatives are on the table, some of you said? So I've outlined some of them. So be sort of part of the single market, like Norway and Iceland and Liechtenstein, but without being really in the EU. We could call a general election if enough votes can come through it in the Commons, but that won't happen because too many Conservatives are worried that Jeremy Corbyn would win. So rule that out. There might be a second referendum or people's vote, which is moderately likely, but Theresa May has also ruled that out. Theresa May has also ruled out extending Article 50, which means giving us more time to get a new withdrawal agreement. We could not have a Brexit. If enough people in Parliament vote, we could not have Brexit. But, I mean, there's probably a 1% chance of that happening. We could panic and try and reconstruct a new deal in this 10 weeks, which is presumably what Theresa May is going to do. But the EU says it's not that keen to renegotiate, and to be honest, the deal it gave us is really the deal on the table. So, if all that sounds stupid, that's because it is. We're running out of options and time. What would be the impact of a no deal? Well, I've also already talked a bit about that. One of you asked specifically about tariffs. I couldn't find many examples, but exporting cars to the EU, there'd be a 10% tariff on it. We would probably lose access to subsidies for agriculture and farming as well, which would put many of our farms into bankruptcy or collapse. What is Jeremy Corbyn's position in comparison to Theresa May? Corbyn's position is very hard to pin down. His Labour Party are still trying to go for an agreement with the EU, which is kind of in the single market, kind of not, kind of a part of the EU, with all these great advantages for Britain that the European Union would never agree to. The Labour Party is still stuck at a stage which even the most deluded pro-Brexit MPs left a long time ago. So Jeremy Corbyn's not looking great. The general thinking is that a much better leader of the Labour Party probably could have called a general election and forced Theresa May out of power by now. He is probably secretly in favour of the EU because he's so hard left. He might even see it as a sort of capitalist plot oppressing the workers, which is not as far-fetched as it sounds. So Corbyn, I do not rate highly. And as you can tell, I don't rate Theresa May highly. But I rate Corbyn even less than Theresa May. And then the last couple of questions, there were some really good ones regarding our future as young adults and older teenagers. So what happened? So how does it affect us as young adults? In the same way that a lot of politics does, it will be indirect. The impact on the country will probably be felt economically, which means we will probably in our future have less jobs. Might be that welfare payments are cut. It might be that spending is cut, so we will less be able to access education. It may have some political effects. Maybe more of us will try and be involved in politics when we're older to stop this from happening. But I foresee the real impact being economic and impacting us, as I say, in the same way that most politics impacts us indirectly, through what the government does, impacting our life options and our life decisions. Which is why it's still important to be invested in Brexit, because it will, we are the generation who will one day say, yes, we came of age during Brexit. We had to endure all the problems that Brexit threw at us. And finally, what will our future look like after graduation, etc.? So this plays again the question I just answered. My thinking is that the government will probably try and specialise in a lot of key areas. So I would imagine science will probably be invested heavily into to make Britain seem like a world leader in science. I reckon that we'll probably try and boost our cultural image. So media and the arts will probably get a boost. But for a lot of us, we will struggle to find work. A lot of firms may leave the UK. And so economics is one of the most chosen careers in the world, in the UK today. A lot of people will not be able to find jobs to that degree. So I'm sorry, the future looks bleak, and that's very pessimistic from poorly informed for once. But do you know what? I'm an optimist. I believe we will pull through. I'm not a fan of Brexit, but this is still a great nation. And I still believe we will be okay and we will make it. So, thank you very much for listening. I hope you've learned something. I hope you've understood something. If you aren't too sure, then please comment, you know, the stuff you think I didn't cover or stuff you want to know further. Please comment in the reviews, or best place to get in touch, Instagram or Twitter at Podcast Poorly. Get in touch with us there. Let me know, some of you have my personal Snapchat. Let me know on there. Thank you very much for listening to the first episode of Poorly Informed, Slightly More Informed. This episode was presented to you by me, Theo, and I hope you learnt something about Brexit. Bye-bye.